You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. The Heat are 2-1 and ready to face the Atlanta Hawks for two consecutive games. And even though their roster has been a bit out of sorts without Jimmy Butler, Deion Waiters, and James Johnson, thought it might be a good opportunity to open up the mailbag on a Tuesday. Let's call it Tuesday Transmissions. Why not? This is a question that comes from Billy from Cleveland. So I saw on True Hoop they were doing some season projections and had the Heat at only 39-43. And as I was reading, I saw this quote from David Thorpe. To our listeners, Coach David Thorpe is an ESPN personality. He's also part of the Athletic series of podcasts there. So he's a world-renowned expert on basketball. This is his quote. "This is a team in the middle of the road that just got a little older and more expensive by adding a top 20 NBA player in Jimmy Butler. Without help, they could waste Butler's peak years. So, best plan, get Justice Winslow into all-star status." Billy continues, "People talk a lot in the NBA about all-star appearances, even though the all-star game is more of a popularity contest. Would you rather Winslow and Bam Adebayo aim for all NBA teams, even if they don't make it, or aim for all-star teams? When players like Luka Doncic from Dallas can be the second leading vote-getter for Western forwards, or Kobe Bryant in a season he's got a torn Achilles and not even playing, it kind of devalues a title based on actual merits. I feel all NBA teams honor players for accomplishments like Goran, Dragic, and Phoenix, where all-star status is a popularity contest combined with the fact you need 12 guys from the East and West, which leaves a lot more deserving players out in the cold. Heck, I feel being able to just get to that level without the recognition like Mike Conley is just as good when you're more focused on winning than individual accolades." Again, that question comes from Billy from Cleveland. So first of all, thank you, Billy, for writing this in. A lot to break down here, but let's start with David Thorpe. 39-43, I think, is undervaluing what Miami does. And if we've seen anything from national media pundits, is that it's impossible to watch every game and learn the nuances of every team. Thorpe has a good opinion here about the subject. He understands that Miami might be limited as far as overall talent, which absolutely does win in the NBA. But there is potential here. We've seen some great performances from young players like Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn. We've seen Bam Adebayo and Justice play very well so far this season. And that's without Jimmy Butler, who is not just a top 20 player, sorry, David, but he's also a top 15 player, perhaps even a top 12 player. As far as Billy's question regarding the All-Star versus All-NBA accolades, I think All-Star is an odd thing to you know, kind of value because of the popularity aspect to it. A lot of it has to do with the fan vote. There is a media component. There is also a player vote that goes into it. All of these things kind of change and skew who gets added to the roster. As Billy points out, you also have to have certain players from the East and West, and so there are players that are certainly very, very good from either conference that might get left out. There's also the positioning of it, which makes it very difficult. All these things that you have to consider. But it does matter. All-star appearances are still written into contracts. All NBA selections are written into contracts as well. And so players absolutely value these things. Mike Conley, who Billy points out, is somebody who gets to that level of greatness without necessarily receiving individual accolades, has said many times he wants to be an all-star. I mean, this is something that he's talked about. I remember specifically from his appearance on the Low Post podcast with Zach Lowe from ESPN, where he talked about how much it bothered him that he just happened to be in the Western Conference, and for whatever reason, either an injury or another guard playing a very, very good season, you know, he wasn't selected as either an all-star or all-NBA player, and so that was something that really upset him. And he was still hoping to get these kind of accolades because it's important to them. It's something that they see growing up as a hallmark of what it takes to be a great player. Now, both All-Star selections and all NBA selections have some narrative-driven voting taking place. You know, for an All-Star selection, a lot of it has to do with team success. And it's something that I've always had a problem with because when you're looking even at the MVP, a lot of it has to do with narrative. You know, Giannis Antetokounmpo was a very good selection for the MVP last year. But at the same time, he doesn't get that selection if they don't win 60 games. And those 60 games did not come from just Giannis. They came from guys like Malcolm Brogdon and Eric Bledsoe and Brooke Lopez and all-star Chris Middleton, you know, all these other players on that roster who contributed to their winning. And the fact that Mike Budenholzer was able to take this talent and get the most out of it, run an offense that was, you know, that caught the rest of the league off guard. And so all these things take place. It's very difficult to separate the individual success from team-wide success. But either way, to Billy's point here, the point is, I don't think you should really try for either. I mean, I think that's perhaps asking a lot, but I think they're going to get recognized regardless. We had a question following the loss to Minnesota, whether or not Bam Adebayo could reach Defensive Player of the Year consideration. And I think we start to see more and more of these games where he's shutting down opposing centers and switching on to ball handlers, and that starts to drive the narrative. It helps to have a media presence. It helps to have fans kind of push them. And it also helps to have national recognition where games are on ESPN or games mean something. And a lot of this has to do with Jimmy's individual performance. If he carries this team, as we expect that he will, and this team wins 50-some wins, then I think you'll start to see other players gain some recognition as well. I think the reason why Goran was selected recently wasn't because he was having the best season, even his best season in a Miami Heat uniform. It was because that team was winning a lot, and he was the best player on that team. And I think he was getting recognized for his performance from the previous year as well. And there were a number of injuries in the Eastern Conference that led to his selection. That was something that stuck in a lot of players. Particularly Ben Simmons didn't think he should have been overlooked in favor of Goran Dragic. I happen to disagree with that selection. I mean, I happen to disagree with Ben Simmons' take on this, but, you know, regardless, I don't have a vote. I wish I did. And if I did, I'd probably try to be a little bit more open-minded about how these votes get doled out. But the reality is these players just have to have perseverance. They have to do what they can to control the narrative, and that starts with on-court production. They can't worry about everything else, and maybe it sounds a little cliche, but they'll probably say it more often than not, is that they can't control these kinds of things, and they'll just keep pushing. If they get all NBA status, absolutely. I mean, that's great. That's recognition, I think, from media people that are probably a little bit less biased. But even among the media, there is absolutely going to be bias. There are people who will vote for players on their roster, who will vote for, you know, Russell Westbrook as an MVP when clearly he's not even the best player in the conference, much less in the league. And these kinds of things can't be eliminated. It's human error. It's part of the game, unfortunately. And the fact that a lot of contracts are tied to it, I think, is the overall point that we should probably be looking at, is the fact that they should not be, because of the popularity aspect, because of how impossible it is to say this player is better than the other, because you can't separate individual success from team success and things of that sort. So all these things are very, very difficult. I think so long as we continue to appreciate these players, for now, I don't think Bam and Justice are necessarily concerned with these selections, at least not this early in their career. It shouldn't matter to them. I don't think it does. I think they'd rather just win consistently. And then as they get older, they'll probably want to prove themselves. And that's fair. And I think that's totally understandable. And hopefully they'll get that opportunity at some point down the road. We'll just have to stay tuned and hope for continued growth from both of them. Now on to our next question from Stephen Wang, who asks, who has played as the Heat Big Three these past three games? Well, that's pretty clear. Without Jimmy Butler there, who would probably be their best player, I think you can make a case that actually works out pretty well, that Justice Winslow is more LeBron-esque. He's putting up some good points. He's also doing everything as the overall best player on this team who creates opportunities for others. He's a good rebounder. He's a triple-double threat on almost a nightly basis, and we've seen that from him over the past three games. He also provides some pretty staunch defense. So I would say that Justice as LeBron is a pretty fair comparison, at least as far as this context being the big three. You would have to value that Kendrick Nunn is actually more like Dwayne Wade. He's the go-to scorer. He's the guy who gets the points. He creates opportunities for others by driving to the rim, but his shot has been far better than Dwayne's whoever was. And so he's been very, very good as the team's preliminary scorer. Not bad as a playmaker. Okay as a defender. He does a lot of little things, and that's something that a lot of Heat fans can appreciate. And then as far as the Chris Bosh role is concerned, I'd say it's probably Bam Adebayo, and I think a lot of that has to do with his defensive tenacity. The fact that his points have been maybe not as high as we'd like. I think we'd want a little bit more production out of Adebayo. But the reality is that right now he's just playing very good defense. He's providing more of a solid overall contributory role. And that's a lot like what Chris was able to do, where he took a step back from the gaudy numbers he was putting up in Toronto to just be a really important part here, a complementary player to both LeBron and Dwayne. And I think Bam fits that role perfectly. So let's move on to our next question. Prediction on free throw percentage this year. I believe that Coach Ron Rothstein, who is the former Miami Heat coach, who now, of course, is part of the halftime show for Fox Sports, he said that it was 69% last year, which was damn near bottom of the league. Well, actually, last season they were at 69.5, so that was correct, and they were the last ranked team as far as free throws are concerned. This year, they are currently 20th at just over 73%. So there's been some improvement there, but overall, still not particularly good. And a lot of that has to do with, I think, Justice Winslow. His free throw shooting has not been good. Over his career, he's been a 64% shooter. He was 63% last year. He's down to 59%, just under 59% this year. He's missed a number of shots. Bam also has struggled at the line. He's just at 66% this season as compared to 73.5% last year and 72% in his rookie season. Those need to pick up. Even Goran Dragic has struggled from the line a little bit. He's a 70% shooter this season as opposed to 76% for his career. He was 78% last year, 80% the year before. A number of players here that have struggled from the line, and that's all contributed to why Miami is 20th ranked this way. I think that's going to improve, and I think a lot of that has to do with Jimmy Butler returning to the lineup, and that's because he is an 83.5% shooter for his career. Last season in Philadelphia, he averaged 5.5 free throw attempts per game and was knocking those down at almost an 87% clip. So that's going to improve dramatically, and I think once he gets in there, he's going to get the bulk of those free throw opportunities. As much as we've seen Justice get to the line and others, I think we'll start to see Jimmy going to the line a lot more, and as long as he can continue to knock it at a pretty decent pace, I'd say Miami has a good chance at finishing about, let's say 75%. That seems about fair. That's my prediction anyway. It could change. If all the other players I mentioned before start to round up to their career averages, then we could see maybe even a slight improvement over that. So hopefully that's the way it'll pan out over the course of the season. But coming up next, I'll talk about what's next for Udonis Haslem 2.0. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. Talk about Dion Waiters in the next segment, but first a few questions about the man known as Udonis Haslem 2.0, Chris Silva, out of the University of South Carolina. So Billy Miz asks, if there were no hard cap issues and the Heat wanted to make a player like Chris Silva a full-time player, is it possible or is there a waiting period before he could be converted from a two-way player to a main roster? I'm still unclear on the two-way contract rules, writes Billy. Okay. So the way the two-way contract works out is that it protects the player from being able to be signed by any other team. If he was just simply a player that was on a G League affiliate, then any team could take that player. The way that Kendrick Nunn was selected by Miami last year, even after he was on the Golden State affiliate in Santa Cruz. And so if Chris was sent over to Sioux Falls as part of the Sky Force, then any team in the league that could use a big athletic player like Silva would be able to select him and add him to their contract, to their roster, rather. But a two-way also gives Miami the chances to help Silva develop a little bit more by having them be part of the big-time club. And also you get a number of days, 45 days in particular, for them to be able to be with the team, practice with the team, play in games if necessary. And all those kinds of things really help a player's development. Now, we've already seen Silva, I think, in all three games this season. And so if he's been spending time with the team as a practice player, in addition to playing those games, that's problematic because those are all chipping in away at that 45-day window there. And some players in the past, I've talked to Alex Caruso from the Los Angeles Lakers, and he had to go back and forth between the Lakers and their G League affiliate. And that's how it works. You get a player sent down, So it doesn't count against those 45 days, and they come back up to the big club, and then they start keeping that total going again. As far as Billy's question regarding whether or not they could make him a regular part of the roster and convert his contract, they can, but not at this point because of the hard cap. Because Miami is capped out, they would have to either waive a player or trade a player and reduce salary there so that they could have enough room in the salary cap to convert Chris Silva's contract to a regular contract. Right now, that's not the case. It doesn't seem likely that they will be. They're using him up as if that's the intention, but then a move has to be made, and I'm not sure that they're going to waive Deion Waiters. I'm not sure that they're going to stretch his contract out or James Johnson's contract out. Either of those deals seems unlikely to get moved. So I'm not sure. Maybe they'd rather just have Silva's impact as much as possible, knowing that once James Johnson is brought back into the roster as an active player, the reality is that Silva wouldn't get a lot of playing opportunities because Johnson does a lot of what Silva can do as being an active body that can make plays for others. He's not as long as Chris Silva is, but he still has a similar impact, and he's a better shooter also as well as playmaker. So I think that they're probably just going to use Silva's 45 days and then probably send him down to the G League as a two-way contract player where no other team can take him. So we'll see how that plays out, but it's an interesting proposition, and I'm hoping that Miami could keep Silva on their roster full-time, but right now that's not a possibility. I also got a question from Juan Gutierrez, who writes, Silva seems like a valuable piece and added a stronger dimension than Myers-Leonard, not to overreact. Do you think he sticks as a rotational piece? Well, we've seen that he can. I think that the team intends to continue using him again until Johnson returns. So we'll see how it plays out. I know that's pretty vague, but I know they like him within the organization. He's provided great value. I think Spoelstra has been quick to dismiss the Udonis comparisons, although he likes his hustle, his grit, and all the things that Udonis once brought to the team when he was a younger player. And so that's kind of similar. You like these kind of players who are hungry because they contribute. They're willing to do all the dirty things, the little things that make wins much more attainable. And they succeed where others fail. And I think that's something that Chris Silva brings. It's no coincidence that both Silva and Udonis Haslem played for the same college coach and Frank Martin, although Martin was Udonis' coach at high school. But either way, that's still why the connection is such a strong one there. And I like Silva's overall impact. He goes in there, he plays defense, he can't shoot right now, but he does other things, and that's why he's being such a positive factor. So I hope he sticks around as a rotational piece. Like I said before, I don't think it's very likely. But for now, at least he can be a contributor, and that's something to be positive about because Miami has found another player that can be useful, and Miami just happens to find a way to continue to develop these guys to bring the most out of them, whether it's Kendrick Nunn or Chris Silva or Duncan Robinson or anybody. They found a really good system that works for them, and that's something that Heat fans should be very, very proud of. Coming up next, is there a place for Deion in Miami or anywhere else? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. Kevin Heat NBA asks, would Deion start for Dallas? Deion and Derrick Jones Jr. for Courtland Lee could work as a salary dump for Miami. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't seen the Mavericks play just yet, so I'm not sure if Deion would be a starter for the Mavericks. I think a lot of that hinges on Rick Carlisle, and that's not in Deion's favor because Carlisle is a notorious hard ass. He played for Larry Brown. He's played for others. He knows what it takes. He pushes his guards very, very hard. He did not get along with Rajon Rondo, and that's been well documented. He hasn't gotten along with a lot of players there over the course of his tenure, and I think Deion probably would struggle there as well. I think knowing that this team belongs to Kristaps Porzingis and Luka Doncic, and knowing that they're going to be the primary scorers, ball handlers, etc., I'm not sure that Deion would thrive there. And so I don't see an incentive for the Mavericks to take his contract on. And giving up Derrick Jones Jr. to move Deion in exchange for Courtney Lee and his expiring contract probably benefits Miami a lot more than it should. And again, I think you'd probably get a large percentage of Heat fans who would not want to give up Derrick Jones Jr. just because they love his athleticism and his explosive dunks and his defense and things of that sort. I'm starting to get very concerned about his health overall because it just seems like he's constantly going to get hurt. And I think that's the nature of his high-flying game and the fact that he is a little undersized and underweight. And so, I mean, if you can move him, I would prefer to move him for a valuable player rather than Courtney Lee, who's just playing out his deal before he faces retirement or minimum veteran-type deals. There's some value to Courtney Lee. He can space the floor. He can shoot a little bit. He's not a great defender. He's not a great playmaker either, but he's not going to get much playing time. He'd probably understand that as part of Miami. So he's just a guy you bring off the bench. Would he be willing to accept a secondary role to a guy like Kendrick Nunn, who's proving himself to be a better overall scorer and impact player as a rookie? That's a tough question. And I don't know Lee well enough to answer that, but I'm sure Miami would certainly dig around. They've absolutely made a number of deals with Dallas in the past. And of course there was the rumored trade with Dallas for Goran Dragic over the summer that fell through. And so I imagine that the Mavericks are a pretty willing partner to exchange players with Miami. They just have to be the right one. So I don't know, Kevin, that Miami would be able to deal Dion to the Mavericks. So we'll have to stay tuned and see how that plays out. I also get the last question here from Ashley Herder, who sent this in via email saying, "I blame the Miami Heat. We all knew what kind of player Dion Waiters is, and to think you're going to change him? Nope, not going to happen. He was the same player in Cleveland and Oklahoma City. Now you signed Jimmy Butler in the offseason. Do you really think the mentality of Butler and Waiters can play together? Both are alpha males, want the ball. Finally, let's stop pretending that Miami wants Waiters. I mean, you tried to trade Waiters last year. Now you want an alpha male to play the six-man role? Come on, man. I think Miami wanted to get rid of Dion all along. Shake my head." So I think Ashley's point here is probably in response to my podcast from last week, the Dion dilemma, because I did present Dion's perspective a lot here. And from what we've seen more and more and from what we're hearing from the franchise is that Pat Riley might have been personally upset by Dion's inability to fit in to the role that they envisioned for him, that he allowed himself to get unhealthy following his ankle injury. The fact that he's challenged whether or not the team had his best interests at heart when they forced him to come back to play after he signed that contract in 2017. I don't know that any of them are right. I think both parties are wrong here. And I still think that, as I said during that podcast, that Dion probably should be willing to accept a lesser role. And now, to her point, or I'm sorry, Ashley's point, regarding whether or not he's the same player as he was in Cleveland or Oklahoma. In Cleveland, he was a top five draft pick, and he was expected to help carry that team alongside Kyrie Irving, who we've seen can be a very difficult personality to get along with. He kind of burnt things in Cleveland. He burnt things in Boston, certainly. He made that locker room a very toxic place. So I don't blame Dion for not being able to get along with Kyrie Irving. And then once they reacquired LeBron James in 2014, well, hell, that changed everything. And so for Dion, all of a sudden you're the star player or one of the players expected to bring this franchise back toward their winning ways. And you bring back LeBron and you add Kevin Love and you change the roster to add more experienced veterans. And now you're kind of left out in the cold. And so I will challenge what Ashley says about his role in Oklahoma City, because he did thrive as a backup player there. He was willing to embrace the six-man role. He played for Scott Brooks there. He backed up Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, obviously, and he played a good, solid role there. Part of the reason why I was excited about his addition to Miami is because of what I saw from him up close in Oklahoma City. And so I think he can still be a valuable player there. I just, at this point, the more I talk about it, the more I think about it, the more I talk to others who know about the situation, it just seems like things are broken. And so to Ashley's point, yes, they did try to trade Waiters last year. They've been actively trying to shop him because I think they recognized early on that things were probably broken between that relationship, a breaking of the trust that Pat Riley had placed in Dion. He rewarded Dion with a large contract. Dion let him down by getting fat and out of shape, by not staying in the kind of shape he should have been, even after he was nursing himself back to health, by not doing what he did this summer last year in order to get himself into even better shape. These are things that might not be reparable. And the fact that he was trashing Spoelstra on Instagram does not help. That he challenges him is one thing. I think a lot of players challenge him, although I would say that Dion's challenging of Spoelstra on the bench in the middle of a preseason game, that doesn't mean anything, going too far. He should not have done it. He has to be a better, more responsible person. And I think he can be. I think there's so much pride involved there. I keep talking about it. Like I said before, I think he's trying so desperately to prove himself, and he's just not going to get that opportunity in Miami. And so it's probably better that they cut him loose and send him somewhere else where he might have an opportunity to shine, because he's just not going to get it in Miami. I don't think that's realistic anymore. And so I don't see a good resolution for either player or team. And they're just going to have to move on. And in either they're going to continue keeping him inactive because Spoelstra doesn't want to deal with him, or, you know, Dion's just going to have to figure it out and say, look, I was wrong. You're hurting my overall value one way or the other, so I'd rather just come back to the team, accept the role, whatever role you decide is best for me, and I will play to the best of my ability. And if he can do that, maybe you can repair the situation and you can start to grow from it. But right now, because of how Kendrick Nunn is playing, because of the fact that you do what we've seen over the first three games, and that was without Jimmy Butler, Dion's role seems lesser and lesser, and that just makes him even angrier and more upset. So I just don't see a resolution there. Anyway, that's all we have for today. The Heat are back on the floor Tuesday night when they host the Atlanta Hawks. I'll be back with a recap following the game. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thanking you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.